And just a bit of background to this. I'm giving this because I think so many people, I teach, people I know, and myself have gone through the experience. And again, as I say, if you've already done your first degree and so on, then this, some of this you'll already know and have behind you. But so many people have noted that you go through a lot of academia without anyone telling you what it is you're supposed to be doing, right? They say, in fact, when I was just saying to someone, when I did my undergraduate degree, you'd write an essay, read it out, the professor would say, yeah, fine, that bit about that was, you need to look at the scholarship a bit more, but no, fine, give it back. And 2 years later, you wouldn't know whether you were an idiot or a genius. You know, you'd be trying to guess. And, you know, it's not as if you can read your friend's essays all the time or whatever. It's very hard, actually, sometimes to know exactly what it is you're supposed to be achieving. And they don't, of course, also tell you how to get there. It's interesting to have such a high-level academic pursuit without a training ground. Of course, in the States, it's a little bit different, I think. Now, this mystery, I see its values. It adds a hermetic sort of air of awe to the whole process, right? And I think even more so perhaps in Oxbridge than in other places. But at the same time, it has clear problems to it. I think it can alienate people. And I think it can be misleading, because often people make it seem as if as you go through, say, do your A-levels, for instance, that an academic essay in the university will be just a better version of the kind of thing you do in the highest levels in school, i.e. in the previous year. And that's not quite true, of course. So one of the main reasons for people getting 2-1s when they could have gotten more, or 2-2s when they could have gotten a 2-1, is that they're basically producing the same kind of essay. Maybe better, but because it's the same kind, it doesn't get that higher level of grade. And in a way, while I loved A-levels, they're much more about showing how much you know, putting down the information that you have, giving it a structure, you know, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. Shakespeare's Antony and Cleopatra, you know, she's good, she's bad, she's all right, done. You know, but as long as you kind of show your knowledge, perhaps thematically structured or what have you along the way, that's kind of what they're looking for. Whereas when you get to academia, and there's a transition, you know, at the lower levels where you're gradually gaining these new skills, but in some ways you're doing something very different. And just to give some history behind it, maybe, my own experience was that I kept getting high 2-1s, but I could never figure out how to get over into a first. Right? And a lot of you have already done this and you've gotten that thing. But I think it's still pertinent when you get to the master's level. I think master's essays also, it's not always clear what you want. And it's at a strange place halfway between an undergrad essay and, you know, graduate research. I was always getting high 2-1s. I couldn't figure out how to push through that mysterious barrier. And I always remember hearing the English students, who were kind of the cool kids in the 90s in Cambridge, saying, oh, you know, I've heard that you can get a first in just like 3 sides of writing in your exam, you know, maybe even 2, you know. Oh, that's impossible. You know, you must have to put in so much information to get that standard. You know, this is kind of this urban myth that was going around, and I thought about it. Also, I think rumours of, you know, Wittgenstein's famous for when he gave in, not Wittgenstein, some other famous philosopher gave in sort of 1 page of an essay in an exam, and it was such genius that he got like the top first ever in his subject, you know, and all this stuff makes you sit there and think, remembering your exams where you've scribbled, trying to get all the information down. What is the extra thing I'm supposed to do? How is it that I could do less and still do more? And in some ways I think that's very important. We'll talk about that more in the exams seminar. But that little idea made me realize that it certainly wasn't quantity. It was very much about, I don't want to say quality. It was almost, for me, about not so much putting down huge amounts of information as being able to manipulate the vast amounts of information at your command in a way that says something interesting and new about the subject. Okay. And when I say that, I'm already pitching, it'll be clear, but I'm already pitching at quite a high level. In a way, I'm trying to talk about to everybody what is involved in, see, I can get sued for saying this, involved in firsts, involved in high-level work, involved in good master's essays. You can get a grade 2-1 by just writing huge amounts of information and knowing lots, and that's great. And that's good. That's good scholarship. That doesn't mean that you're less right. That's fine. But this special thing, which it is to do academic writing, is very different. And when I was trying to figure out how to, as it were, show my quote-unquote vast knowledge, actually it wasn't particularly vast at that time, but how to fake my vast knowledge, I realized that I needed, as it were, to skip across this wider range of information, of scholarship, of reading, and show it as I went. But that I would be using this information to say something that I thought was insightful, interesting, new, worthwhile, insightful into the subject that whatever my question was addressing. It took me a couple of weeks of sitting there and, you know, staring and sleeping for 3 hours a night, and eventually I kind of cracked it enough to achieve what I wanted in my essays and in my exams after that. One thing that was very helpful to me, just as a tip at the outset, and again, a lot of you are in postgraduate research, so you know this. The moment I started going to journals and reading articles, which is, again, in a way, you know, we read books, and they give you lots of information that's useful, and they do indeed have their own theses within them, but they're not immediately helpful as a guide to how you should write an essay. But a journal, an article in a way, I think is more useful. It is much closer to the kind of length that you're talking about. It is supposed to be at the forefront of concurrent research. That's why it's been accepted for this journal. It should be, in a way, the best that people are producing at the moment. And so I think they can offer quite a good model. When you read the articles, you start to see how, on the one hand, yes, they're showing lots of knowledge, they're showing lots of information, this is very useful, but at the same time, they are pulling it all together into an idea which is relevant to the discipline, is maybe indeed at the center of some issue that needs to be resolved, and is sort of negotiating the different debates. An article should show an understanding of everything else that's been written around that question at the time. You know, and you move along with the writer through these debates, through these issues, looking at the information until they take you to an answer, which makes you go, oh, why, yes. You know, that little feeling of, why, yes, they're right. Huh, that's what this writer wasn't, you know, really getting right. And that's what this other writer was hinting towards. And, oh, yes, and they're confirmed by this other scholar in the field. And, oh, look, they've given this piece of evidence that makes you immediately see that it must be true. Okay, that's an ideal article. You know, but in some ways, that's what you're doing. That's what you're doing as a student as well. And which I think is wonderful. I actually think that's great. I'm so glad that writing academic essays is not a matter of regurgitating information, and is actually a matter of you having something distinctive, interesting to say that you can express in your own way, with a certain creative panache of your own, addressing whatever issue you find significant, using the resources and the kinds of answers that really make sense to you. Right? It is personal. Thank God, it does mean something. Right? And I think that is the idea. Yes. And here's the part we're going to come back to. In order to do that well, you have to have done a lot of reading. Yeah, but that's okay, because the more you get used to doing it in this fun and wonderful way, the more inspiring that reading is, the more it's your material, your tools, and not just something you have to learn and sort of and wrestle with, as it were. So that's kind of a background, I think, from where I'm coming from. Mostly what I'm going to do in this seminar is suggest some tips and ideas, and some of them will be relevant to you, not all of them will be. Some of them you'll be like, not in my subject, I do engineering, or whatever. But some, you know, and also, of course, different subjects, different essays, different topics. Part of the creative pleasure of writing essays is that one of them may be super historical. The other you may want to use mostly secondary stuff. Another one you may want to use mostly just philosophical analysis of the primary text. Whatever, that's okay. That's also a nice thing to do, to discover your own preferred methods and approaches. So take from this whatever you want. Reject whatever you want. And also, hopefully, I want to leave a little space at the end just for discussion and questions. Sometimes it's useful to say, what are the main problems that people have? It can be useful to hear what other people have to say about it as well. So that what I just said was what I've put at the top of the handout, the mystery of essay formats and the transitional stages of academic writing. That idea that there are different kinds of essay, and the academic essay in higher education is one that it won't be necessarily the same as what you get before that or in other contexts. And you have to make a transition to understanding it. And actually becoming an academic, I think, is learning what... When you learn to write a good essay, you've learned what academia means. You've learned what research, meaningful, insightful, well-informed research that puts a brick into the wall of the universe's understanding, what that really means, when you've got that down in a way. So it's a good thing to do. It's also handy because it gets you grades. That practical side, but I'm a real idealist about academia. And as I said, there's not just one format. There are multiple templates and ingredients. There are different ways of doing it. And if you've ever taught and marked essays, you'll see how many diverse approaches there are. So don't think that you have to, there's a hidden template you have to follow. I have one student who at the beginning of every paragraph says, I'm going to say this, says it, right? Gives lots of evidence. I've got another student who kind of, in a more organic way, argues his way through different topics. And maybe a little bit after he's given the evidence, he says, so you see, actually, this is the answer to this thing. You know, and you get that, they're both fine. They both have strengths. You know, some people will want to... classic essay formats. We all know that you can do thematic essay structures versus, if you like, argumentative essay structures. So I would have thought of a good example sort of subject to use. It's hard to think of one that all the humanities can relate to. Let's say I get an essay that is discuss the depiction of other cultures in Fraser's The Golden Bough. Okay. I could do that in such a way that I actually just want to be fairly methodical and thematic about it and say, well, you know, let's look at his discussions of other cultures. Let's look at this one and then this one. Let's look at how he does European cultures, see if it's different from how he does Asian cultures. And after I've done all these things and discussed them all, you know, and looked at the research on each one, then I might come to a broader conclusion. And that can be fine. Although I think there is a danger that you won't discover your argument, your own distinctive angle, till the end. But that's one good way to do it. Alternatively, classically, different essay structure. I may get my boxing gloves on and say, right, obviously, you know, the very question itself is fundamentally flawed, you know, or obviously the main academic in the field who's written on Fraser has completely misunderstood his fundamental goals, you know, whatever. There is that other kind of essay structure where you take something and you say, this sets it up one way, this whole way of looking at it. I'm going to look at that but then argue the other way, create a debate or key into an existing debate, and then come to a higher understanding. Right, that's another way to do it. It has certain advantages in that it's immediately exciting, immediately sort of gets you engaged with scholarship, different approaches, interpretations, makes you immediately shows that you're able to assess different kinds of information and maybe disagree, evaluate, etc. So there's certain virtues to that, although sometimes it can be a bit forced. It's always a shame to have to create a debate if you don't really think one's there. Mm. You know, and so it doesn't have to be that way either. It's these are tools that you have. Maybe with the Fraser essay, a good approach is often to borrow the question. Usually, the question's there for a reason. I spent a year doing an exercise where every essay question I got, I'd look at it, and I had this theory in my head that every single word could be used as the crux of some clever essay debate, right? By and large, it was true. Almost every time. Like, I got down to sometimes even the was like, you know, but wait, you know, can the, is this, you know, reification of this thing, but even appropriate, and you can do this with a lot. So maybe in the Fraser essay, I'd say, discuss Fraser's description of other cultures. Other cultures. Other cultures partly makes you immediately think debates about otherness, about cultures which are seen as foreign, about foreignness. This keys into a criticism of Fraser that he's too much involved in a Victorian approach to the lurid exoticness of other cultures, and that he does this in a fundamentally depreciative way, right? So already you've got post-colonial studies, trendy topic, plenty of books and anthologies on this you can use, and I might look at that. I would, if I was writing that essay, argue with it, both because you always have to give two sides, by and large, if you can. You know, showing your ability to deal with subtleties and different sides of things is very important. It's very important not to write a one-pointed essay, I think. If you've got a coherent theory all the way through, that's fine. But show that you see the other sides as you go along. So maybe, and I would also disagree with it, because I actually disagree with it in some ways. Yes, Fraser's awfully lurid. You may not know The Golden Bough. It's quite appalling in many respects. Classic work of Victorian sensationalist literature. But at the same time, I'd say, but look, go to the text. There's a section where he talks about fundamental premises of human understanding that are universal across all cultures. And in this, he's clearly trying to establish a way that we can understand people of other cultures, reduce their otherness, see them as fundamentally like us. Therefore, given the historical context in which he couldn't fully voice this theory, nevertheless, he's approaching some kind of a globalist ethos of cultural hermeneutics, blah, 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 whatever. And then, having come up with my wacky theory, I'd probably go to the library, look for any articles, any publications, anything that I could use to take it further. One thing that's worth noticing is, as you come up with your own ideas, you can never stop taking it further. The moment at which you stop is the moment when you have to give up and hand in your essay. But things are always being published. Maybe you know that frustrating feeling when you've got an idea. You're like, wow, this is amazing. I'm really at the forefront of an understanding here. And the next book you open is your idea. And you're like, damn. That happened to me all the time. Just when I thought I was getting smart, I'd realize I was about 10 years behind current scholarship. 10 years isn't bad on sort of a global scale. But that's okay. You update. You have to be kind of intellectually brave and energetic, I think, to say, okay, that's all right. I'll stand on the shoulders of giants. You know, my theory has been confirmed. And now I have quotes and a person to cite to back up my theory. And now I can go even further than them by taking an extra half an hour to read through and think about what they've said, what its implications are, and what I can add on to that. Right? Does that kind of make sense? You shake your head and say no. So the point that I want to get around to there is that there are different formats you can use to write your essay. Maybe themes. You may want to do your research and grow towards an idea of your own. You may want to start off with your idea and marshal the research to it. You may want to be argumentative. You may do an essay that is just a very close and careful assessment of some data. All of that's fine. One thing that you'll always find, and I'll keep coming back to this, is if you want to write a good essay, there will be something in this that is your own. It's good to write an essay where you've just really covered in detail all the existing scholarship. That's fantastic. And that's not easy. And you will get points for that. Sometimes that alone will take you over into the highest level, grades-wise. But really, it always has to be something analytically, something of understanding of this data, which responds to what everyone else has said and thought about it so far, and gives your own answer. Okay. And two things I want to say on that. One is that for every subject, you have to do two sets of reading. You're being examined on two different sets of knowledge. One is your knowledge about the subject of the essay, right? So let's say I'm doing an essay on Vedic Indian religion. I'm being tested on my knowledge of Vedic Indian religion, okay? But there's a whole second level that you have to deal with. You're also being tested on your knowledge of what the field has had to say about it. Okay, you're being tested on the subject, but also on your field. In academia, always. For better or for worse, it's kind of true. So they'll also want to see that you know who said what. You're aware of the different interpretations and debates that have come up along the way. You're aware, more than that, not just that every time you make a point you've got someone to back it up, you've shown that you're aware of the issues that are current and important in that subject. Okay, and that used to irritate me. I think when I first started, I'd think, why does it matter? You know, if everybody's obsessed with post-colonial studies and otherness, I don't actually think it's the most important thing in the world necessarily, or it's misconstrued in certain ways. Why do I have to do this? Part of the answer is you do. That's how it's set up, the academic system. But it also, in the end, is always useful. It's always useful, even if you want to argue that we shouldn't be looking at post-colonial constructions of the other. You can't argue that that's the wrong way to go about it unless you know the literature and can cite it, unless you can reference it and say, this has been said, it's really stupid because of this. Okay, don't say it's really stupid. I once said that, this student wrote, this is really stupid. No, couch it in that silly language that's used in essays, but effectively say, this is naive, it takes an uncritical approach to a concept of otherness that has come out of the blue and has been invented by a number of scholars who themselves seem uncomfortable with intercultural interaction, and we don't necessarily have to subscribe to this issue, for instance. And do it by making sure that you know the scholars, know anyone who agrees with you, who may have already said things that can back you up, and maybe can give some point of evidence. And then you can go in your own direction. And when you go in your own direction, you'll be taking the reader along with you. Okay. And that's important. The examiner isn't there to struggle with your essay. One of my students asked me, is it true that examiners only read the first page and a half? Right. I said, no, it's not true. At least I hope it's not true. I'm fairly sure that it's not true. What does happen is that they sometimes think in the first page and a half that they know what your essay is going to be. My experience is almost never true. Usually the ending is actually quite different. But actually the examiner isn't there to just, especially at reading essays, they're not just there to process this bloody thing. Your teachers, your examiners, learn a lot from what you have to say. Okay, whatever level that you're at, the more you research, the more you're teaching them. The better you write, the more the person reading your essay will think, oh, wow, tell me more. And it stops being an essay they're reading, but just another scholarly work. No student whether first year undergrad or a final year of master's or even PhD student, should feel that they are by definition at a lower level than the people who they're having tutorials with and being examined by. In theory, you're at the same level. And you may be at the same level. You can be at the same level. It's all just relative to how much work and reading and thinking you've done. And that brings me to another point, the other point that I wanted to make, back to another urban myth perhaps, but again, when I was at Cambridge, I can't remember if this was the story or whether this was, I think it was actually said by one of the professors and does relate to certain guidelines within the ideas of what it takes to get different grades. I remember someone saying, well, you know, to get a first, it's not just that you write a really good essay. It's that you say something that has never been said before. Mm. Right? Mm. And we were all like, at this point, we're all freaked out, we're caffeinated, we're anxious, and our heads explode, right? And while it's not strictly true, in some ways, I think that's right. In some ways, it's been one of the most useful bits of advice I think I ever received. A really good essay, really good. She covered all the points, showed all the information, knows all the stuff. Really good. Depending on your faculty, that will be very good. It may get you a first, but in many cases, that's exactly where you're supposed to say this is really good, but not that strange, mysterious extra thing, which is the top level. An Oxbridge first particularly is supposed to be quite hard to get. You're not supposed to have too many of them by definition. If you don't have any in a year, well, that's actually seen as being quite a big failure on the part of the department, but it shouldn't just be the top percentile. That's what it's not, I think, just supposed to be. It's supposed to be the person who's shown that, yeah, they do have something distinctive, extra, to say. Right. Okay, whether or not it's something that no one has ever said before, in some ways that's a good way to look at it. It should be beyond all the information that you already have to hand. Okay, and a lot of people don't quite get that far. Really good students will cite this scholar, read the latest book, the finest essay, and say, all these different things are said, here's where the debate has reached, and that's it, I've covered the field now. And that's fantastic to do, but it may not be enough. Because really, what you're able to do, what scholarship is about, is to go further and advance the field. Right? Every essay is training for becoming a scholar. I think they don't always say that. It's as if your master's essay is just about getting the exam done, and in a way, even the system starts to look at it that way. But the sense of what's really top quality work is that this is training for you to become someone who can write the works that will take your field forward. So, in my Fraser essay or whatever, I'll have to cover everything. And if somebody's already made this point, I need to think about it, think around it, think what hasn't been said, what gaps exist, what are the problems with this, what more can be done, what are the implications of the insights that have been made, what's the logic of this, take it further, what's going to happen if the field continues like this, what does this mean for the wider historical context maybe, can this be challenged by a different part of Fraser's life, is this, maybe this insight by this other scholar was true, but has it been taken on by the wider community of scholars? What if we transferred this idea to the study of E.B. Tyler or whatever? So there's always a place you can go. And actually, that's when it gets interesting. Partly because you get to choose where you go. Right? So it reflects you. And in a way, that ideal of a first as something that is uniquely yours, at the pinnacle of the world of scholarship in your field, is great, is much better than a lot of other quite tedious and, standardized, industrialized approaches. Because it propels you towards something unique, and it gives you something that's your own. Okay. So that distinctiveness, that sense of something that you have to say, your own point. On a broader scale, what's that about? What that's about is that you have to have, in some sense, you have to have an argument. You have to have an idea. And it's interesting how I think, so in some ways, I think even when I start to take on a new subject and research it afresh, you're so busy taking in information that sometimes I just want to put down the information and all these ideas, and I forget that I need to really take in all the information and then stop and then simmer it for a while, right? And then figure out what extra reading I need to do, maybe outside my subject. Maybe I can't understand Vedic ritual unless I've looked at the way it's been interpreted from a structuralist paradigm. Maybe I need to go read some structuralist anthropology so I can criticize the way it's been used by someone in that field. I might even have to go read some philosophy and figure out why the structuralists were wrong, right? Who knows? But that going off in some direction, that is what it takes to refine your own research, is important, valuable, and how you achieve excellence, I think, in many respects. That could be out into secondary literature or into a primary text. I tend to lean towards, I'm interested in ideas, and so I tend to do lots of reading around scholars and issues. But it may be that you want to go back to the text and show how that scholar who said it was about structural anthropology got it completely wrong, and I'm going to look for the evidence within that bit of data. Whichever way you look, that's fine. But you're still following your own path. I used to think of it as a lower-level essay builds a huge ground plan of a building, but it doesn't get all the way to the spire at the top because it's so busy laying the foundation of knowledge. And that's why doing exams is useful. You realize you can't put down every bit of knowledge, you know, because you've only got an hour, right? 45 minutes. You have to give just the spire, just the beautiful gleaming idea that actually makes sense of everything that leads up to it. Okay, now in some ways that's one of the things your essay can do. Now, let's go back down to kind of the nitty-gritty reality of actually doing this thing. So I've written the cryptic phrase Chinese boxes. There are, you know, here's where we look at different ingredients that are needed, that are useful in trying to put together the essay. Starting at the real ground level, where you gather your material, reading, you all know that. You wouldn't be here if you didn't. Try and get as much of the information as you can. Granted that we all do essays within a limited time frame, you know, and that's okay. Yes, I mean, my own experience how to deal with time restrictions in writing essays, I'm really bad at it. I'm like a deadline disaster. But for instance, if you commit yourself to 4 hours in the library, I find it's amazing how much you can get through. And maybe the first four books you read or go through, you're not going to read every single word necessarily, first four books you read will take you 2 days, but the next four will take you 1 day, and then the four after that will take you maybe half a day, because your knowledge always increases as you go. And you'll start going, oh yeah, okay, I know that. Oh yeah, I see where that fits in. Oh yeah, I got that. Okay. So you do feel yourself getting better, processing faster the more you know. I also found it my own experience that in the library, let's be real, apologies to all my my past supervisors and tutors, I don't have time to read everything. But I do have time to look at everything, right? I do have time, even if I can't really go through as well as I'd like to and for the deadline, I have time to look at it, go through the title page, the contents page, to go through and get a sense of it, the kind of argument it's making. I'm constantly amazed by how much I'll learn from a book by opening three different pages at random, right? Sounds crazy, but actually it's often true, you know. And sometimes that's where you go and you'll get some, there'll be a little idea, a phrase, a thing in there that makes you click. Maybe something completely different, a methodology that you can use that, that's it. or some bit of information that you can just fit in and fulfills this idea or takes this idea forward. So, you know, don't be over conscientious in the sense of, if I can't get to it, then I just won't do it. I have to read everything in detail. Read as much as you can. You will come back to those books that you're only able to glance at. And some of, with, you know, the way the system here is structured, depending on how it works, it's good if you can write the essay but still have a chance to come back to it later. I actually think that's one of the positive things about exams, although it has its problems. But you want to be able to write your essay, put it down, do your best with it, put it down and come back to it. And when you come back to polish that beautiful sculpture that you've created with your, you know, bare hands, you will make it much, much better. Partly because you'll have read more, you'll have learned more, partly because you'll have this objectivity that you get from being able to see it afresh. And also, I think, partly because there is a funny alchemy of academia, just having done all that, worked on it, thought about it, put it aside, and then let the reflections sort of turn over time. When you come back to it, in a way, you'll have a better overview just because of that, right? So it's often useful to come back to things in that way, which is an argument for getting coursework essays in on time and then having a chance to revise them before you submit them finally, which is something I rarely achieved. Don't learn from me. Okay, so you do all that work. You get all that information. You write volumes of notes. You do all that research, not only with regard to the subject, but with regard to what people have said, right? Given that. What you then need to do is not just structure it. I mean, it helps in the first instance to structure it thematically. You have to do that so you get a sense of what's going on there. But then you need to find your argumentative structure. And I've suggested here, I've written, using the question to find the meta issues. Answering the question. What does it mean to answer the question? Now, if you're given a question, of course, this is easier. In a way, when you're given a question to answer, it's somebody giving you a hand, okay? Because they're pointing to something. And usually they're pointing to something that involves certain issues, certain questions, certain debates already, right? If you're not given a question, okay, and that's dissertations and coursework essays and things like that, that is hard. That can be hell. You know, we've all had the experience of, you know, how are you even going to put together your plan for research when you haven't done the research yet. And one of the things that signifies is that, in a way, you are always being asked to have done quite a lot of reading before you even put forward your proposal. Okay, and that's a tough truth. That's where some of that skim reading can come in handy. That's where getting a sense of the kinds of issues and things that are addressed and where research lies can really help you at least to map out the field in your own mind. But in a way, in the end, when they talk about research question, they do mean a research question, not a research theme or topic. So I may say, I want to study... You can indeed say, I want to study Victorian representations of African ritual. Great. But they'll always say, yes, but what's your research question? And that's where you do have to do preliminary thinking. You really do have to pre-think your way into whatever you're doing. And I have to think, okay, what is it I'm going to want to... What is it I find interesting about Victorian representations of African ritual? Is it the way in which they're trying to get it right? Is it the way in which they're using it for their own ends? Is it because I want to look historically at the kind of African cultures that people actually came into contact with? You know, what kind of things? Is there some deeper theme, performance in ritual? Is it whatever it's going to be, style of writing in Victorian anthropology, whatever it is, you're going to have to figure that out for yourself. And that's what's expected of you. But again, once you realize you have to do it, it's actually quite positive. That's the chance, that's the person saying to you, what is your thing that you'd like to do? And it will make it much easier as well. You can often change it a little bit as it goes along, although famously, examiners' meetings and faculty meetings are full of people going, this person's changed their essay title, now we have to reapprove it, etc. What a pain. Okay, that is a bit of a pain. And I think it's a shame that it has to work that way. Often, if you need to do it, do it. If you can do it and you need to do it, do it. Write the essay you want to write. Okay. If it's not quite so clear-cut, often you can shift towards what you really want to talk about without necessarily, I think, having to leave behind what your subject seems to be. Right. There's often a way to say, well, I want to talk, I really have realized that E.B. Tyler is much better for performativity than Fraser, but my thing's on Fraser. What am I going to do? It's too late to change. Well, I'm going to have to talk about Fraser, but some of the issues that I wanted to bring up, I can apply to him. Maybe I can use I can say in the essay, I'm going to use Tyler as a compare and contrast. There are ways that you can integrate that thing again. In any case, you're always going to have to find, you know, what that's asking you to do when you preform your question is to find what you would have to do anyway, even if you were given the question. Find your own approach. Actually, getting a question is quite useful. Like I said, every question is really a different question. Every question you get has a different question hidden within it, and you have to find it. If you're given an essay that says, I can't think of any examples right now, you know, but again, like that, the Fraser example, talk about otherness in Fraser's, Fraser's depiction of other cultures. That question is obviously referencing debates about the legitimacy of his representation of other cultures, how that's affected the wider anthropological approach to other religions, other cultures. And it's really asking you, what do you think about this debate? Do you think Fraser's any good? Is this valid, the way that it's been looked at? Could it be different? You know, it's pointing you to something deeper in the question. And that's almost always true. One of the nicest things an essay can do is take a question and say, to answer this question, I have to answer a completely different question. Okay. About how far it's possible to understand and interpret cultures when you don't have any foundation from which to work on, if you come from a radically different world, for instance. The essay might even go on, discuss Fraser, you know, always make sure you're addressing the area of the initial question. Show that you know everything about Fraser's representation of other cultures. Okay, but you're using it to say something more sophisticated. It may be that at the end, he'll say, so we see that original question was totally flawed. You know, and that Fraser was, you know, maybe Fraser was never intending to represent other cultures. He was always creating a phantasmagoria of global ritual, you know. Or the question's completely wrong, because the concept of other cultures wasn't really helpful. As an approach to this at the time. Many people had traveled to those places in the context of the colonies. This wasn't an otherness to a lot of people. It was where they lived and were writing letters home about it, and therefore we shouldn't even start looking at it in this way, right? The idea is that you've taken the reader to a new place. And that takes me to the last thing I want to say about argumentative structure. I have to speed up here. Is that A, what I've just said to you, I could be committing a terrible crime here. What I've just said to you doesn't mean that you can ever leave behind the original question. You're always going to be evaluated at the end of your essay, even if you leave the examiner or the reader thinking, wow, you know, they're panting and they're flustered, they're excited, their whole view of life has completely been changed, right? They still, just before they put on that 99 or whatever it's going to be, they still have to stop and say, but have they answered the question? Is this relevant to the question? And that's one of the things your conclusion will always have to do, is come back and establish that relevance, why what you've said is fundamental to answering that question in the best possible way. Okay, and that's not actually hard to do. That's a couple of lines at the end of your essay, especially if you've thought about it, you're clear about it in your own head. You see, and it's good to do because you also then see the continuity. You realize what you yourself have done. Okay. And usually it will be right. You will have said something that is fundamental to reassessing how, you know, perhaps the whole next generation of poor students will have to try and answer that question. So that's important. Always maintain the relevance. But I also want to say that an essay, I've written this here, an essay is like a short story. And the more I get into writing essays, articles, etc., the more I see how much it is a creative endeavor. It also involves taking your reader on a journey, in which they should be given a situation with a question, a mystery in it. Okay? They should be led to realize how important that question is. Maybe Fraser has established a paradigm for misrepresenting the whole world of foreignness. Maybe this is actually quite important to realize that people throughout these periods have lived in these other worlds, and we shouldn't see it in that way, you know. And so the reader goes, wow, yeah, no, this is serious. Okay, so but can she really back us up on this? Can she show us how we should change it? You establish suspense. The essay takes you through. Maybe at one point it'll take you into a discussion of Fraser's history or colonial structures of accommodation, or maybe it'll take you into his discussion of Nigerian witchcraft or whatever, some particular thing. And often I think that's true. You may be dealing with high-level issues. You'll always come back down to the data in the midsections of your essay. You're going to come back down to the facts and use your evidence. Without that, you've got nothing. No one has to listen to you. But that's exciting. That's where you're really, you know, your fingers are in the clay, as it were. But as we go through that journey, you know, we'll start to feel, oh, yes, it's coming together. Oh, I see, the mystery is starting to unravel. Ah, it all starts to fit together. You get a denouement. Often in an essay, you'll get a turning point later in it, where someone says, you know, therefore, what we haven't realized is that actually Fraser's sister was a Nigerian witchcraft doctor or something, you know. Oh my gosh! And so everyone will go, oh my goodness. And but there'll be something that makes you go, oh, I see what this person's driving towards. And you build on that, and you can say, yes, that's right. By the end, the reader says, oh gosh, I get it. The mystery's been solved. My sense of suspense has been, you know, brought to a satisfying closure. And the conclusion, you get that closing end. A conclusion may even say, you know, not just, and therefore happy ever after, but, you know, I wonder what happened after that. You know, did future scholarship should maybe look at the immediate families of great writers in the Victorian period and whether or not they actually did have contact with these cultures who were seen to, whatever, whether they too were, whatever, something exciting, you know. It doesn't hurt always to put to, at the end of your essay, you can round off beautifully, create a little gem. Sometimes it's nice to point outwards again. You know, if I had more time, I would write a world-changing text that would explain the fundamental blah, 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 or future scholars may do this. It just gives that sense of what else there is. And it sounds, you know, almost pretentious, but that's what you're doing. You're finding out stuff that people need to know, and it doesn't hurt to show that. Ideally, that's what you're doing. Okay. Just what is the next point? Marshalling evidence. And in a way, I should say more about that probably than I'm going to do. I may do in the exam seminar. You need evidence for everything. It's a great tragedy when you read someone's essay. They make lots of good points, but they don't really back them up. They're a bit vague. They generalize too much. Right, because in a way it's like, well, that ought to be a good point, but I can't, I have to strike that one off. No, oh, that's good, but what do they really mean? Who are they referencing? Sometimes that's not true. Have they just come up with this out of the blue? Okay, so you always need to show that you know, to back up your points. That may be, that can be reference to a text. It can be facts and events. Some people are really good at marshalling history to support their ideas. It may be secondary literature. That's a great way to skim through information. That's a great way to cover a lot of information in a short space. is to just use a nice, neat quote from a scholar who says it for you, pithily. You're backed up and you can move on. Okay. You may even want to make a point, put your footnote, and then, as is very popular, you know, list a couple of books, a couple of scholars, dates, etc. Show that you know it, you've got it, people are behind you, you're not crazy, it's fine. And that's very important. Okay, so I've written, ideally, don't just add an idea onto your knowledge, use your knowledge to back up the idea. Part of the idea there is that you're not just presenting lots of information, and then at the end you're kind of like, say this sort of means this. You've got your idea, you're using the information to show your idea, which is based on that knowledge that you've got from all that solid, solid reading. I mean, don't just come to it, as I've done in the past, with a cool theory, and then you try and force the facts to fit your theory. That, again, is another thing that's easy to do. Try not to, partly because it often shows, though you can pull it off. you can go at it that way around, but the important thing is that the evidence is there. All of this is premised on you having got that knowledge. And just to reiterate, marshalling evidence can be secondary literature, it can be primary research of your own. Sometimes it's quite nice to have a bit of both. That really shows the people looking at your essay that you have the whole picture in hand. You know the theories, you know the people who've done the research for you, but you're not scared of going in and saying, but is this really true? You know, what are actual reports of those practices in that region? Or what does this text really say? Is the author consistent? Maybe the author, you know, so many texts that are seen as presenting a certain approach, when you go into it, actually says much more complicated things, maybe contradicts itself, presents a whole different side to the theory. And, you know, I was reading Freud the other day, I was reading Jung the other day. You know, everyone knows their basic ideas. You go into the text and there's so many other things to say that potentially totally revolutionize the general way. And they're there. They're there in Borders, you know, on page 4. You know, it's not that hard in that sense. And all you have to do is be there with me in Borders and your coffee and a notepad, taking down that quote that will really show completely, that could be fundamental to your essay, right? So that's marshalling the evidence. Resources, amassing and showing knowledge, facts and citations. So that's kind of what I was saying. You've got the facts and you've got the citations of other people. You can both allude to what other people have said, and you can also quote directly to show that you've engaged with the material. Showing understanding. A big thing, and if you look at the guidelines for essays and grading in Oxford University, it's all on the net. They talk about depth of analysis, quality of understanding. Okay, actually, they talk about that slightly more here than they do originality, I think, arguably. No one should sue me for anything I say here. They talk about the student showing that they've been able not only to take in the information, but to analyze it, analyze the interpretations in depth, with sophistication and subtlety. Okay, dealing with the subtleties is hard. I've been guilty in the past of going, so here's an idea, boom, I've got it, it's all like this. And that's powerful and strong. You get points for a powerful, strong clarity of argument. But without the subtlety, you look a bit childish. Right? Show that you can deal with things that don't go along with your argument. You can make sense of those as well. Go deeper. It's often something you want to encourage people to do is to say, okay, it's not just about the otherness debate, Jessica Fraser. You know, that's all very well, but that's kind of done. What does it mean to go deeper into that issue? Does it mean redefining otherness? Does it mean redefining the way in which we look at it as a polarized, dualistic kind of martial ethos of one country against the other? Maybe we need to readdress certain fundamental things that are in here, or whatever. You find some way to push deeper in. And that's important with the idea of what analysis involves. drawing on appropriate sub-disciplines in an aware way. Well, I put this in partly because I teach religion, where you deal with interdisciplinary work quite a lot. If you do deal with interdisciplinary work, and I think everyone does increasingly in the academy today, it's encouraged more and more. That's great. I think it's great, and I think it's quite exciting. I always enjoyed going to like the anthropology faculty library and being an anthropologist for a day, you know, and reading a very different kind of work and thinking about a different kind of methodology complements other things. In religion, it's important, of course, because so much we do is dependent on texts. And everyone's realizing that sometimes the text is a very limited picture of what the whole religion involves. It's actually a very biased picture because it's mostly upper class guys, etc., etc. You know, so I'll learn that. Maybe psychology can help. Maybe all these different disciplines. So drawing on different disciplines and their whole different approach to knowledge is actually really useful. It can be very stimulating. You don't have to, it may not be pertinent, but it often is in some way. So that's a good resource. But in an aware way. So don't do it uncritically. Be aware that this is a different approach. You know, be thoughtful and sensitive about it. Reading text with sensitivity, again, a big issue in the area where we tend to have canonical texts. Let's say I read the Golden Bough, I just read it. I already expect to get a certain message out of it. Let me read it with sensitivity. Let me find out why he wrote it. What was the context? What kind of literature, what kind of genre he's writing into? What's the history of its reception at the time and subsequently? What other ways can it be interpreted? Something that I find exciting is often to look at, because I half a wannabe English student, to look at the style. You know, people do this, for instance, with St. Anselm now. Well, it's philosophy of religion, but there's something very devotional, something very poetic, something very affective. You know, the discourse is hitting you on different levels at the same time. And that can be very interesting, I think. There are all these different ways that you can approach a text and get different things out of it. Okay, exploring material, engage with original text if possible. Yeah, I've said that already. Knowledge of the scholarly field as well as the subject. I've said that already. Always testing you on two bodies of knowledge at once. Know the issues and controversies. And that's a quote actually from the guidelines to how to grade essays on the, I think that's on the Oxford site, although I might be wrong. Write as a scholar. And I've said this again and again. You are a scholar. You're not just some student trying to get a degree. You're now a scholar. Write as a scholar. Show awareness of subtlety, complexity, and possible disagreement. If you need to disagree with a writer because you think they're wrong, not just for the sake of it, but because you think you're wrong, do it. Okay, and part of what people do in academia is put ideas out there as well researched as possible as an interpretation. They're asking people to say, is this right? What else is there? Have I missed something? And it's a great benefit in an essay. It's often one of the things that's used as a sign of a first essay, is that the person is able intelligently, convincingly, with confidence, but also subtlety, so not like a big, you know, not a big sledgehammer, but in a subtle, intelligent, discriminating way, criticize a certain approach, a certain theory, or part of a certain theory that's come up. Show why it's wrong, what the effect of it is, how it can be improved. And I said this part as well. The bright spark, originality and sophistication. A first is awarded not only for detailed research, solid understanding and coherent argument, but for originality, going beyond the usual. And I think, and this is again from another set of grade guidelines, you're supposed to show, quote unquote, own judgment on main themes. Your own judgment. Informed judgment, you know, but your own judgment. And again, while it all sounds like something difficult to do, what they're doing in these boring guidelines is respecting the student. Someone who has something to say that everyone else can learn from. And I really think that's true. You know, some of the best essays are from students, I've had are from students to whom I've been able to say, you can say something I've never heard before that I really need to know. And this happens to me all the time, every single year that I teach, someone says something that blows my mind, and I hadn't thought of it, and it makes me readdress the way that I think about everything, and it's really useful, and we're grateful. And hopefully that student will go on and do something with it. That is not, you know, mystery, that's a truth that happens frequently. So that's one of the things that they're looking for there. And indeed, if you want to go on to postgraduate study, and indeed, you know, on to become an academic, that's what you're going to be doing. That's okay. And they say, if you follow the obvious line and accept concepts uncritically, that's a second. Confidence and criticism, you're standing on the shoulders of giants, disagreeing, creatively juxtaposing ideas. That creative, imaginative side is there. And I've already emphasized the creativity and the aesthetics of essay writing. A good essay, at the end, you feel like it's, you can almost visualize it. You see this beautiful thing that you constructed. The structure of it, the significance of it. You feel good about it. You love those quotes that you found to put in it because they were great quotes. And there is a real aesthetics to it. And it will be your own. Your essays will look like no one else's. You know, they're your Michelangelos or Raphaels or whatever they are, you know, whichever Renaissance artist you want to be. And yeah, the final tips I won't go through, they're pretty much the same. The more you read, the better you'll do. Articles are helpful. Cite, be willing to critique and improve upon the views of scholars. Engage with primary material, looking for subtleties. You're being tested on your knowledge of debates and issues and study the topic as much as on the topic itself. Yeah, write that short story. Make that sculpture. I've gone 4 minutes over, and if anyone needs to rush out, then do. But has anyone got any questions, any comments? Any of that sound totally mad?
I just wondered, when you say sort of build upon your own idea, mm-hmm. is it best to put that at the beginning mm-hmm. of the essay, or would it be better, I suppose it depends on the topic and subject really, but to bring it out after you've gone through the evidence and then sort of sum it up mm-hmm. with your own idea then?
It's a very good question, and to some extent it's different for different people in different essays. I do think that when you write an essay, you start by answering the question. You try and identify the issue in the question. You go through all the information. You look at the evidence, basically. And at the end, you come to a conclusion. Now, in a way, for me, when I write, that conclusion is the moment where you go, okay, so that's my conclusion. That's my answer. A, can I take it any further, ideally? But also B, once I've completed my, you know, whatever my thing is, I do need to take it back to the beginning. And often for me that means that I will reconsider the introduction and that's the idea of writing a short story. You want to point people somewhere. You want to say, by the time we finish this essay, we'll never read The Golden Bough the same way again. You know, wait and see how and why. And when you get to the end, you get that sense of, oh yes, that's right. It's also helpful because I think often it's graded as quite a positive thing because it suggests that you know where you're going, you already have your ideas, you've really taken in the information, assimilated it. But I guess the last thing is that it's a good argument for doing all your research and reading, stopping, thinking about it, writing lots of, as much essay planning as you need to before you write your essay. Again, the difficulties of timing can make that hard, and that's okay. Again, if you're an undergraduate just trying to write essays every week, each one is a chance to do something exciting. And you do your best, and maybe you only come to a conclusion at the end. That's okay. If it's coursework, you may rewrite it to reflect your broader idea. If it's an exam, you're going to have to, anyway, turn it into a condensed form that you can reproduce quickly and easily. So don't be too worried about that. But ideally, there will always be a period between your finishing the learning, thinking about the stuff, coming up with your ideas, researching deeper into your ideas, and then figuring out your argument, essay planning it out. Essay plans are wonderful things. You can write your whole essay, think about it, and think, no, I don't like that. Rewrite it, you know, but it's only like blobs of writing on a piece of A4 that is crumpled in the bottom of your bag. That's okay, you know. You can keep doing that. So when you come to write your essay, it's great. You know, you're Michelangelo, and you already know what the shape of the sculpture is going to be. So if you see, I mean, if you're just trying to get your essay out, don't worry too much. You may want to put something back into your intro. Essay planning helps. So it's not such a huge issue, but it does help if you can point the way from the beginning.
Okay, thank you.
So it's big answers to questions. Anything else? from your own perspective, this is just my bit of research, what do you find most difficult, most problematic and challenging about essay writing?
Or dissertation? You don't know what's going to come out at the end.
Yeah.
You can start, you can have a whole bunch of things.
Yeah.
It is like an artwork, so if you compare it to a short story, it's right in a way. You can't plan it, and it wouldn't be research if you knew what the answer would be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the first draft thing is really good.
It's really
cool.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the reasons why PhD students go crazy. Is that you're expected to, they really do. Hopefully they become sane again by their third year. But believe me, second year usually completely mad. Is that you're asked to do this huge work on a subject which by definition no one else has written about, and to know where you're going, but you can't. It's not until you get, usually by the end of your third year, when you're already into no funding land, that you are starting to realize what you want to say. And I think that's often true, but it just means that ideally you should have a chance to do that reading. I do a lot of sitting in Blackwell's, you'll see me there, staring out the window. People think I'm mad. But you have to process the information after you've done the reading. You know, because that's that, you're right, there's that thing where you get in there and then 9 pages in, you're like, wait a second. You know, it's a creative process. Anything else? Difficulties?
I think the thing that I've struggled with the most coming here from the States, where you just reproduce what you've learned and that's fine, it's an A, is taking that time to process everything and having the confidence to critique secondary sources.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had this moment 1 week, like last term, thinking, that's what I'm supposed to do. Like, it's not like a question, but like you have to do it, and they're not always right, you know.
Yeah, I think
so,
that's right.
Just read through and questioning everything and looking at the notes and like, where did they get that from? How did they, you know, you start realizing that they're not always right.
And a lot of subjects, they need someone to come in and actually fix that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of subjects are in confused places or difficult places and need to be sorted out in a way, and that's where you start to realize it when you read through the texts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly what you mean. Mm-hmm. Anything else? All the rest is easy.
Well, I've gotten quite varied feedback on things as simple as format and structure of the essay. So I'm working a lot with visual images in addition to argumentation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often challenging to figure out, how does one construct the argument, I mean almost visually, to lay out, to be able to make the points you want to make, because you're working with an image that's in another place and things along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't cracked that one. Except to say that maybe there's a time when you just say that the professors are all crazy and I'm just going to do it the way I think that it works.
Yeah.
But I haven't found that there's a, maybe my case is a bit extreme, but there's sort of a consistent sense of what it ought to look like.
I think that's right. And you know, the idea that there are a couple of different templates, you know, you might want to do it theme by theme by theme, summarize. You might want to create an argument, marshal evidence for this and then for that. You might want to follow a question through a range of different... There are different ways to do it. But I also think that you're right. In the end, you may find the best structure. As long as it's hard to reread your own essay and tell whether or not it successfully takes the reader along a clear, logical path. Okay. But in a way, that's what you have to do. And that means that you may find your own thing. But as long as it follows, you know, that's those old essay structure techniques of making sure each paragraph is clear what it was about. Next paragraph, what on earth is this about and why it relates as the next point. That sounds really simple, but it's still frequently ignored. But as long as you do that, in some ways, and there is a logic to how you're proceeding through your essay, it will work. If you see what I mean.
Mm.
And the reader, often the person will read and go, what is she doing? Oh, that makes sense. Now I see why they said that. Okay, that's fine. Tick. If you see what I mean.
Mm.
So, yeah. Can't give you any easier answers. I guess I should let you guys go. Well, thanks for coming. Next seminar, if you come to it, it's really about how to turn essays into exam essays, which is a very different thing, I think, and raises a whole set of different issues. So anyway, thank you for coming.